you keep following your true passion, because that gives you immense joy. That gives you immense joy. And if you do what you love to do every day is playtime, you know, it's not work. When you're doing something that you hate to do and you have to do it because you need the money or something, it's such a pain. Every day is painful. The world is changing outside, you know, and to some extent you have to be in sync to accrue the economic benefits of that revolution. Fun things about what I do is it touches so many different aspects of life. Mm-hmm. So one day I'm talking to SpaceX engineers, and another day we are talking to a Harvard surgeon, another day to a student in high school.
So welcome to all of you for the fourth edition of Spheres of Learning. Spheres of Learning is a talk show that we hold monthly. And the intent of the talk show is to expose students, educators, and others on different, and to learn from different career paths of people who have walked, in different parts of life. Right, so you get exposed to different careers by listening to the journeys of others. So today's talk is from Div Harish, who's a friend of mine since over 35 years. And Div is a graduate of IIT Bombay and did a master's at Drexel University. And he's also done an MBA from Wharton. He's had a varied career, being an engineer at GE, an investment banker, being in venture capital, as well as being an entrepreneur since over 20 years. So welcome to the show, Harish. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much, Girish. It's my pleasure to be part of your show.
Yes.
It's an honor, I must say.
Yeah, tell me, you actually, one thing I forgot to mention to everyone else, we had several participants on these shows. You struck me as one who's actually one of the key inventors. You know, besides the having a storied career, you actually had 20 patents. And this is a photograph from your office, from your this thing. Can you tell me a little bit about this photograph itself?
Yeah, this is in my little company in Fremont, California, Lodestar uh-huh. Sensors. Uh-huh. And this actually is an implementation of our IoT solution called StockView.
Okay.
Which is an IoT solution that uses smart scales connected to the internet and the cloud to automate inventory management and inventory counting. You know, one of the big drudgeries of life is to go and figure out what you have in all the bins. You know, you could have thousands of parts that you use to make things, and then you have to, somebody has to go look, see if it's if you have enough of it, when to reorder it, when to replenish it. So we have automated it, and this is just a peek. The photograph shows you the stock view for our own inventory. So we use our own solution for our own inventory management. So we drink our own bath water first before we offer to others.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the floor is yours, Harish. Tell us a little bit about your journey,
right? Okay.
Yeah. And Thank then what you. You're doing at Lodestar and StockView, of course.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Let me just give you a quick glimpse of what we do. First of all, a little background, right? Yeah. From the Big Bang to the moment you stand on your bathroom scale to measure your weight, everything in this universe that you see is a result of forces, you know, and they've been divided into four major categories: gravity, electromagnetism, strong and weak nuclear forces. So these four forces result in everything that we see, the whole universe, the whole globe, including ourselves and all our stuff that we are surrounded by. So force is a very fundamental aspect of life as we know it. Whether you see a rocket taking off, you know, there's thrust forces involved. When a plane takes off, there are drag forces holding it back, lift forces keeping it afloat, drones flying, you know, to come and deliver your pizza to you. You need to know how much weight there is to pick up, you know, how much fuel to burn, at what speed, trains overcoming friction to go at super high speeds. So everything that you see is affected by forces, you know, and studying forces, understanding forces is critical to making these things happen and making these things work efficiently. So all these forces are important to study. And when it comes to even the human condition, you know, things that are very personal to us, touch, love, you know, fights, all of these have an aspect of force involved. So I've always been fascinated by forces, you know, when from the time I was in my high school with, you know, other kids, 11th, 12th, F equal to MA was a central Newton's law of physics that we all learned when we
were in high school. Force equal to mass into acceleration, yeah. I remember my formulas.
Yeah, F equal to MA is one of the simplest, but one of the most profound formulae that I learned in high school, and I still love it, and I still use it, and I still help other people understand forces at work. Uh-huh. And that leads to what we do, actually. This is what we do. We make force sensors, you know, how to measure forces, whether it is push forces or pull forces. We offer sensors that measure these forces. And one of the key innovations we brought about compared to what earlier versions existed were, is that we made it digital and easily connectable to the computer, you know, so directly through USB. You could just plug it into a USB computer, launch a little program, and it would tell you how hard you're pushing, how hard you're pulling, so you can do all sorts of experiments very easily without being a deep technical, you know, electronics, electrical engineer who can understand stuff at very deep levels, right? So we made it simple for people to understand it. And the second thing was it was software friendly. So other people could implement cool applications with it without being a deep physics, electronics engineer. So for example, if you're just a software engineer and you know Python, you could easily connect to it and write your, say, physical fitness application or something else, you know? So we made a few innovations that brought force measurement into the 21st century. So I hope everybody understands. It's also called a load cell in industry parlance. So we took these load cells that are classic physics 101, EE 101, Wheatstone bridge networks using strain gauges. And we invented capacitive sensing. We brought USB wireless sensing and so on and so forth. So that was our key innovation. And that led to this overall vision of ours that was not just for force, but it could be torque measurements, which are, you know, when you turn your steering wheel in the car, that's a torque. You could be punching something, that's an impact level, liquid levels, temperature, and so forth. So we now offer all kinds of sensors connected through USB, through Bluetooth, through wireless, onto your computer or into the cloud even. So we enable the sensor data to be accessible from anywhere, anytime, on any device. And that's been the mojo of our company.
So basically, if I were to summarize, you're saying the fundamental thing is force, and force is everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And because of force, there are different things like impact and, you know, weight and, you know, many of the aspects. And so you made a sensor on each. And rather than it being a standalone weighing machine in your house, you can now connect that to the internet through what's called the Internet of Things, through different mediums like Wi-Fi, USB, or Bluetooth. Is that kind of summarizing
what you said? That's a great summary, Girish. Yeah. So we also, you know, if you look at the history of the world in the last, I don't know, 100 years or so, there was, you know, in the last 1960s onwards, there was a computing revolution. So the CPU got smaller and smaller, faster and faster, more and more powerful. Uh-huh. Then came the communications revolution, where you could connect these CPUs to other CPUs. And uh-huh. That's how the internet came about, right? Also, the cell phone revolution came about. So Bluetooth, wireless, Wi-Fi, cell phone. Then this connectivity became wireless. So now you could be anywhere, right? And I believe the next revolution is really the sensors and actuators, you know, activation of things based on the sensor data with massive AI ML backbone to gather data from lots of sensors, to process it, and then activate things. For example, if you can measure temperature all over your building, right, and if you can see whether people are sitting in a room or not, and you can turn it off if nobody's there, you can save a lot of energy. So that's an example of sensor inputs coming into a processor and then making some intelligent decisions and then activating things on or off. So we focus on force predominantly. That's 80-90% of our business, but we do all other kinds of things as well. And so does it answer your question? And
yeah. And what is unique about, you mentioned this word capacitance, and while not everyone in the audience might understand what this capacitance is, can you, for a layman, how is this, you know, can you explain that a little bit, or what is different from standing on a weighing scale and and measuring your weight, or, you know, or from what is unique with what you're doing than what used to happen in the last, you know, besides the IoT part of putting it on the cloud, is there something different that you're doing?
Yes. So there's several aspects to it. You mentioned weight a couple of times. So just to make sure, weight is mass times gravity, right? First of all, and it is a certain kind of force which is acted, which is created or acted upon because of the pull of the gravitational forces. And gravity is one of those really mysterious forces. You know, first, nobody could really understand it. It works at infinity. And then Einstein came up with that special theory of relativity where mass bends the space-time around a mass to create this virtual feeling of gravity kind of thing, right? So it's a very mysterious thing. But anyway, weight scale is measuring your weight. And it can be done in several different ways. The old way, and even today, most of it, 99% of it, is done using strain gauges. And for students who are, you know, in high school, college, even elementary school, strain gauges are resistors, you know, resistance devices, where you can imagine a rope, like a pipe, a water pipe, you know, the water is flowing through a pipe. And when you stretch the pipe shrinks, right? It stretches and shrinks. So now there's lesser area for the electrons to go through. So the resistance increases or decreases, and that is used as a strain gauge to measure force being applied. So when you pull on it, the pipe shrinks. Now the pipe is getting thinner, so resistance increases. And then you apply a voltage, and the volt current will change, and that kind of stuff, voltage drop changes. So that's the historical way. The problem with that was it's very low sensitivity, as they call it. The change in resistance is very small. And so you know, we invented this alternative technology using capacitance. Capacitance is more like, if you think about a water tank, you know, upon some height, at a certain height, then it has water in it, right? Now, as the water falls down, it has energy and there's a potential difference and it flows. So it's like the water in the tank is like you have this tank with electrons in it. So capacitance is the capacity of a system to hold electrons or electric charge. And the simplest implementation of it is using two plates, you know, two parallel plates. And the capacitance is given by the formula K times A by...
No, we won't make it a physics lecture.
Right. But anyway, the beauty of that is that it can be very small and very sensitive. So you can make very miniature sensors, which are very robust. So in short, that's what is capacitance.
Okay.
Yeah. So is it okay to give some examples?
Yes, of course. Yeah, because that would bring it to life for our students. Yeah.
So in this particular instance, one of our customers is NASA Ames Research Center, and you know, NASA is working hard to get man back on the moon. And once they get to the moon, and when they're coming back, you know, the astronauts are going to come back on a lander, you know, and when they come back into the atmosphere, the parachutes have to deploy and then bring them back safely to the ground. So you have to design these parachutes, you have to study them, make sure that they're stable during re-entry and all this kind of stuff, and they're strong enough, the harnesses don't break, study the dynamic forces, you know, from wind and motion and all that kind of stuff. So they need a sensor to study all this stuff. So they use our sensor, you know, a number of them put together and multiple harnesses to study the forces acting on a parachute. So that's, and then the fact that ours was very easy to connect multiples of them going to a single computer all through a USB hub and run the program, capture the data, made it much easier for the scientists to study this kind of stuff, as opposed to having data acquisition systems, writing code to just gather the data. So that's a quick example here. Some other simple examples are, there's a revolution underway in the healthcare industry where instead of going to the doctor, you can go to your local grocery store or local, physician center kind of thing, where you can sit at a kiosk, look into a video, talk to a doctor, you know, you can measure your weight, measure your blood pressure, get your temperature taken, and then they can give you videos to watch, instructions, you know, that kind of stuff. So in this particular case, this is actually weight. The guy can sit on the stool, mm-hmm. and then no matter where he sits, you need to get an accurate result. So our sensor goes into this particular kiosk. It's in 3,000-4,000 units across the Midwest and Kroger's grocery stores in the US.
Oh.
Here's a really interesting example of doing surgery. You know, all the surgeons, whether they're doing fixing your bone, cutting into bone, you know, cutting into some tissue or whatever, they all need to apply a certain force, right? When you're cutting, you're applying a force. When you're pulling, you're applying a force. Pushing bones into place, you're applying a force. Mm-hmm. So you need to apply these forces, but most of these forces are not well understood. You know, when you're a teacher surgeon and you're trying to teach a student, how do you tell them how hard to push? Because other kid cannot see what you're doing. So this particular surgeon is a professor at Harvard Medical School, and he uses our sensor to figure out how much force is needed to apply to, you know, lower your tongue when you're putting in a what do you call that thing for COVID patients? They intubate you to, like, all the COVID patients who needed to be intubated, right? So they found that if you apply too much force, there's a long period of recuperation, you know, many complications. So he studied it using our sensors and figured out how much force needs to be applied. And this is true for many surgical tools in the future. You know, it almost like, okay, there's surgeries being done, but you can improve it dramatically, improve training dramatically.
I guess measuring the force they need to put.
By giving real-time feedback, and also the robotic surgery revolution is happening. So how would robots know how much force to apply? They need to be given some kind of a sensor to do the feedback. Okay, stop now, and too much, go back, enough kind of stuff, right? So this is an example of using a force sensor in a surgical situation.
Very interesting, and very varied applications, yeah.
That is one of the fun things about what I do, is it touches so many different aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I'm talking to SpaceX engineers, and another day we are talking to a Harvard surgeon, another day to a student in high school who devised a CPR training machine, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like most people have heard of CPR, and actually everybody should go and learn CPR training, because you might be a guy or girl who saves a human life, because you're the only one around there. And so, but how much force to apply, how fast to apply, right? It's not well understood. So using our sensor, that can be easily shown on a computer and train people. So some people use it for training purposes. Just a couple of other fun things here, you know. So like I mentioned, impact and boxing, some world champion boxers use our tool for punch force measurement.
Uh-huh.
It was also used on the Discovery. It was used by the Mythbusters TV show to demonstrate how hard somebody can punch, how fast you can punch.
Uh-huh.
You can measure it over a minute and say, do you have the endurance levels, you know, how long you can hold that kind of force and so on. So those are the cool, fun things we did. We were also on the Super Bowl recently, the Pro Bowl, where they used our sensors to figure out spike strength, and they held competition where all the NFL football players are spiking the ball onto our sensors. Yeah. So along the way, we do some fun things where, you know, it's kind of interesting. So I'll stop here, pause for a second for any questions from you or anybody else. And before I go more deeply.
Any questions on the chat from the audience? Y'all are currently on mute. And towards the end of the talk, we'll also open it up for verbal questions. But initially, if you have questions, just put them in chat. And Harish or I can read them out, and then Harish will answer. So tell me, Harish, when I was describing your bio,
mm-hmm.
you initially started as a mechanical engineer, then you did your master's, but then you worked at GE, right? And then you said, after working as a mechanical engineer for the first few years after graduation, then you decided to do an MBA and then became an investment banker. So can you tell me a little bit about your journey, about, you know, explaining the whys of what you did, and why you ended up, you know, in the end, trying to do a startup on sensors. You know, it was seemed a roundabout way to get where you are, if I may. So if you can explain that, it would be very helpful to understand your, you know, decision-making process, perhaps. Because see, all of us are like clueless on what to do next, what to do after 5 years.
I was equally clueless, but I guess there is a thread of logic that weaves through all this story, which perhaps I can share. It's almost like a psychiatrist looking into my head and telling what went through my mind here. Yeah. But let me think here. Let me try and answer this question this way. When I was growing up, my dad was an engineer entrepreneur.
Okay.
And he literally was one of the guys who built India's first automatic tablet packaging machines. They call it the blister packs, you know, with the aluminum foil on the back. Uh-huh. And so as he was growing up, you know, as I was growing up, I saw him do all this stuff. And he had a partner who was a business partner. And for various reasons, you know, my dad didn't end up with a fair share of what he should have, you know. And so as I was growing up, I had that at the back of my mind. And I loved mechanics, physics in school. I loved mechanical engineering. I loved space, space technology. All my high school projects were on, you know, the Pioneer mission and the Viking mission and that kind of stuff. And I used to go collect, you know, Raddi. From the Raddi, I used to pick old magazines, cut out these pictures and do
that. And you were from Kendriya Vidyalaya, right? And so many of our students can then associate with this. Yeah.
So there was a very nice old newspaper magazine store where I would go and get cuttings and keep them. And I kept my passion alive. And so even after my master's, my first job was in a company that did analysis work, mechanical analysis for like the space shuttle robotic arm. And then when I went to GE, I actually got to be a spacecraft, systems engineer, where I was part of the command and control telemetry group. You know, I did the telemetry for getting data back from the satellite into the computer so all the engineers could access the data. So there is a thread all the way from high school up to GE. But at the back of my mind was, I wanted to learn the business aspects of things so that eventually one day, if and when I could invent my own products and start my own company, I would have enough knowledge, not just about my technology and engineering, but about finance and business and management and law and that kind of stuff, so that I would be a well-rounded engineer and I couldn't be easily taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So after GE, I decided to do an MBA because I wanted to get that experience and that knowledge of how the world works. And I grew up in the 1970s in India, 1980s. It was relatively, India was a socialist country at the time, more or less. And since then, the world has gone so sophisticated. Businesses are so sophisticated. Capital raising, money raising, venture capital, all kinds of sophisticated stuff have come about. And if you don't know how all these works, it's so difficult to navigate. Either you should know, or you should have good partners or co-founders or friends who really can help you through this thing. So anyway, short answer is that was the reason why I went and did an MBA.
Yeah. And then you became an investment banker. I would assume that is a very high remuneration kind of role. And even then as a venture capitalist, and you still kind of, even having done that after what an MBA, you left that to found your own firm, which I'm assuming that, you know, the early years were perhaps very, very hard, right?
Yeah, so sometimes, you know, all of that? It reminds me of the famous poem, The Road Not Taken. So yes, it was very exciting, very high remuneration. You know, I did a couple of IPOs, M&A transactions, private, you know, so I learned a heck of a lot in a matter of 2 years.
2 years, really? Wow.
I was there for about 2 years as an associate. So I was not a senior banker. But at the bottom, you know, I was an engineer, and there was something missing in that whole thing, you know, for me personally. Where I was seeing other people build businesses and, you know, getting big and being very successful and all that stuff. So I, but deep inside that hunger remained to do my own at some point. And I was interested in going down that path at some point. And I figured, you know, going to a small venture fund that was very actively trying to create new business would be a nice next step, because I wasn't wealthy at the time. And, you know, it gave me a lot more hands-on role in creating and evaluating businesses and learning how these really young entities come up and form and that kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I went from banking to the VC side of things. In a small venture fund, I was doing very unusual and innovative stuff itself. So that's kind of how I ended up there. And when I was there, I actually met some people who had the original idea for the capacitive sensor. And I pitched the idea within my venture fund. And for various reasons, you know, this is the time of dot-com bust and the 9/11 happened. So there was a lot of turmoil going around at the time.
Early 2000s, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and the investors had all recoiled and not too many interested in taking high risk at the time and so on and so forth. So for various reasons, the venture fund shut down, and here was an opportunity that I saw I could do something with as a mechanical engineer, as a guy with a finance background a little bit and venture background. I could see my way through taking this idea and running with it and making it happen. And that's kind of how Lodestar Sensors came about. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a difficult question with a difficult answer, but that is the gist of it in a short period of time.
Any questions from the audience, and you can ask on the chat, or even maybe if at some point we can unmute you as well. So tell me, Harish, what is your advice to kids when they're in school and high school, if you have any advice, or just follow their heart? What would you tell them to do on, you know, as part of the, as they look out on what to do in either in college or after they graduate from college, you know, a lot of them don't know what they want to do. You had the good fortune to kind of know this thing. Oh, I want to become an engineer perhaps, you know, or want to invent something. So how does one even find that, and maybe all of us have a small spark in ourselves that we don't know. Some of us don't know what we don't like to do, but we don't know what we like to do, you know. And so could you comment on that? And maybe even as a parent, you know, it may have been. Yeah.
Actually, I have a couple of amazing examples. And the answer I can give you is this, right? No matter what's happening outside of you, like, you know, the world is always changing, you know. Technology is changing. You know, when you and I learned programming, it was Fortran. Today it's Python. In the middle, it was C, C++. I mean, you know, computer science is really in vogue right now. You know, once upon a time when we were in college, mechanical engineering, chemical engineering was very much in vogue. So the world is changing outside, you know, and to some extent, you have to be in sync to accrue the economic benefits of that revolution. What I mean by that is, if the world is going to automobiles and you are a rickshaw driver, you know, you have to learn to change, and maybe you become an Uber driver and go with the times, right?
Right.
So a little bit of that understanding the currents, and trying to be relevant so that economically there is a demand for your talents is important. But at the bottom of it all, right, if your heart tells you you want to be a singer, a playback singer, right, and everybody and just your friends are going and doing computer science and Python, right? Okay, maybe you go take a Python course also, just in case, but you continue to hone your singing, you learn, you practice, you create a band, you go perform in restaurants, whatever, keep it alive, and you keep following your true passion, because that gives you immense joy. And if you do what you love to do every single day, every day is playtime, you know, it's not work. When you're doing something that you hate to do and you have to do it because you need the money or something, it's such a pain. Every day is painful, right? And a great example of this, two people. One is, you guys won't believe it, my classmate was Shankar Mahadevan. You know, he was a great singer in 11th, 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, Shankar
That's
Mahadevan
amazing.
is my classmate. You know, he probably doesn't even remember me because I haven't spoken to him in over 30 years, but he followed his passion and look where he is today. He has transformed, made billions of people happy with his skills and talent. But he learned, he went and got a computer science degree. He worked as a software engineer for some time until he got his break and became famous and, you know,
Really? Wow.
he is today. And the second person I can tell you about is my daughter. My daughter, Aditi, she now works for Google in their YouTube division. But, you know, she had this artistic talent and she was smart. She could do well in science, math, and all that stuff. But she had this, she could paint, she could draw, she could create videos and, you know, all the stuff. And she was the editor in chief of her school yearbook. And she just loved it so much. I could not understand what it is about it that she loved so much. But she loved it. She loved the design aspects of things, graphic design. And when a lot of her classmates went and did ABC, she found the special program that let her practice her art in combination with innovation and some programming and some marketing. And she made a career out of it. And today she practices that thing, you know. So she merged her talents and her passions with some computer science, some programming, and some technology background to create a unique role for herself, a unique talent for herself that the world needs now so immensely. Everybody needs people with her talent now, you know. If you look at Airbnb, Facebook, you know, TikTok, all these are businesses that combine a sense of design with technology, business sense, and all of that cauldron of things that come together to create a lot of value. So
That's
follow
very,
your
very
passion, but keep your mind and, you know, be relevant to the world, to be valued by society and not fall into economic ruin, you know.
So what you're saying is, and this is a very critical point, you're saying that develop skills elsewhere, but also follow your passion along the way. Maybe as doing projects or whatever. In your daughter's case, she was doing her art and, you know, maybe the school magazine and all of those things where that was the passion while picking up other technical skills. Very interesting. Yeah.
And today, in today's world, compared to when you and I grew up, there's so much opportunity. You can see what's happening all over the world. Reach out through social media, Twitter, you know, you can put stuff on YouTube, and my sphere that you just created is such a phenomenal way of sharing your talents, your passions, your projects with the whole world. So I really applaud what you have done with my sphere and give the kids such a great platform to share their talents.
Yeah, so maybe I can just show Adi if I. Okay, can see the screen?
Yeah.
So mysphere.net is, you know, a platform that's been built for students to kind of look out and look in. You talked about your daughter, you know, picking up skills in computer science and design maybe, but also following her own passion of, you know, doing art projects, doing a school newspaper and things like that, right? So in our world, my sphere is, you know, how do students find their own world, you know, both by looking out and looking in. So what we've created is a platform that we launched a few months ago, where one can look at different career paths, right? And there's a lot of curated content in each of these career paths, right? Whether it's content writing, data science, AI, biotechnology, robotics, there's a lot of content that we've curated, and the content might be videos. So for example, let's say it's, you know, let's say it's data science, right? Yes. So if it's data science, right? So there's introductory resources, there's free videos, there's online courses, there's on-campus courses, there's books that are relevant. There's YouTube channels, there's, you know, you can read about notable personalities, events and competitions, magazines, associations, internship programs in that field, other apps and tools, even movies and other interesting links. So when you're exploring a different career, and then, you know, we have about 20 careers right now, and we'll be adding almost a career a month. So there's lots of information for a student to just explore on what is out there, right? You said one of the important things, especially now, is while you're developing your career, to be something in something potentially relevant, but still follow your passion. So this piece is about being exposed to what's going on in the world, right? And then you can also start building your own portfolio. So suppose you create an account, you can start building your portfolio of what all you've done. You know, maybe you've done a mobile app, maybe you've done some art project, right? And you can start building that kind of stuff. You know, so for example, we found that students are then uploading their projects. They can start creating their CV. So if one, signs in, so I've just signed in. So suppose a person has signed in, right? One can look at the projects that a person has done. Right, there's also some reference projects that are there, right? So suppose you're good at art, you want to know what can you do in an art project. You can click on art, and then you can see this is a reference project of some other student who's done something in art, right? And then if you go back and you want to create your own portfolio, you can create a project, start creating a project. And the thing about a project is, you can see the advantage of this as opposed to doing it. A lot of times when students are using this, when they're applying to colleges or applying for an internship, and then they're scrambling to figure out how is it that I can project the best view of myself. The idea of MySphere is actually a little more fundamental than that, right? So you can be doing this over a course of, potentially different, many years. So right from when you're in eighth grade up to your 12th grade, you can be doing one or two projects here and there. And all of these projects are initially just for yourself. They're always private, right? So it's like a personal blog. If you want to choose to then make what you've done public as a part of your CV, as your college application, you can then give a link to that as part of the CV, and you can, customize the CV based on, suppose you've done 10 projects over a 4-year period, you can in fact select which projects are you going to write about. And those projects becomes links so that they timestamped. So even the person who's reading the CV knows that it's not something that you've written 15 minutes before he's received the email. It can be timestamped with, okay, this is what I did 4 years ago. This is what I did 2 years ago. And when you're uploading a project, you can have text, you can have big images, you can have images and text, carousels, videos, so you can be discovering yourself by looking in while you're doing this. And then when you want to project yourself, you can, make a CV from it. And so there's also a CV builder that's as part of the application.
Yeah, many times people do stuff, but it's all over the computer here, there, and it's all dispersed. This is a great way of putting all the stuff you've done together in a multi-dimensional way.
Yes. So then when one starts looking at building a CV, you can notice that. There are multiple projects, multiple courses that one may have done, and one can say, well, I want to talk about the embedded system and IoT design course and the Python course, which might be relevant to the talk, right? But maybe I didn't want to talk about the testing your code piece, right? Because I want to show something else. And then you may have done multiple, so you can actually choose which projects you talk about as part of your CV, and then it creates a CV. A customized CV, and you can name your CV and have multiple CVs there, right? And you can be, and all of this is in a safe environment, in the sense that if you don't want to show some of your work to some of your classmates, but you could do the, and but at the same time you can share whatever you've done, right? And so, and the platform will then expose you to interesting projects that others have chosen to share with the outside world. So you can make groups, you can participate in and collaborate on different projects. So we're creating a platform that is going to be, you know, we hope that it will reach students worldwide, where A, it's enabling them, A, to look out on what all is out there, you know, from a career perspective. The other is look in by building their own digital diary. And they may not know what they want to write, right? And sometimes they may be writing poetry, sometimes art, sometimes maybe a project they have done, right? And so irrespective of what it is, and then whatever part of that digital diary they want to share with others, they can, right? So that's the idea of the platform. And we actually are inviting everybody in the education industry to be part of the platform, right? Where in the end, but the student is building it for himself. So that's why it's my sphere. We believe that every student has, you know, it's his sphere and maybe different spheres. So, our talk series of spheres of learning is to actually expose students to people who have done different spheres, right? So now, Harish, having given that, maybe I want to switch to some of your other spheres. You talked about your career journey. Can you tell us a little bit about, I know that, you know, having known you for many years, that you're also an artist, a photographer, you do sing sometimes, but I won't put you through that way. Maybe the Shankar Mahadevan thing rubbed off on you in school. I don't know. I'll have to ask him if he introduced me to it. And then you also write poetry. So can you share a little bit of that with the audience? Yeah.
Okay.
You have a couple of photographs that you have. Yeah.
Okay. So just briefly, this is stock view some of our patterns, but what can I say? You know, just because you are an engineer or a doctor or a rocket scientist or whatever does not mean that you don't have any other aspects to your life, you know. Mm-hmm. All of us are multifaceted human beings. We have many needs, many desires, many talents, hidden talents, and you just don't know when it all comes out. Honestly, I did not know I have any talent, or I never ever tried to do anything when I was in high school, college. You know, there were amazing kids like Shankar Mahadevan who sang amazingly. You know, they were great artists, great painters, great poets, all kinds of. I never did anything through undergrad, through MBA for many years since I started working and all that stuff. Over the pandemic, we're all forced into this isolation to some extent, and there was some time, more time than normal available. And as a way of maintaining my sanity, I picked back up some of the things I wanted to always do. I didn't get a chance to do it. I didn't have the time to do it, whatever. So here's a couple of photographs that I've taken, you know, over the last few years that hopefully you guys like. But here's a photograph of a place called Shark Fin Cove Beach near Santa Cruz, near where I live. This is in Lake Elizabeth in Fremont, California. Some wildlife pictures. I like this one a lot because you can literally see every hair, you know, standing out with the sun shining from behind. Here's a pelican near our mutual friend Glau Nyer's house in Half Moon Bay. I love the fact that you can see the eye looking down from way up there, and I was able to get a good picture at relatively, you know, eye level here. This is in my backyard where the hummingbirds come and feast on the nectar and the flowers, you know, in early spring.
Oh, yeah.
So I was able to take a high speed shot here. So I had a camera that I bought 20 years ago just lying around, and I'd hardly used it. But over the pandemic, I picked it up and learned how to use it and tried this and tried that. And just some of them turned out to be good. The nice thing is with the digital technology, you can take millions of pictures and pick the one that looks good. And everybody thinks you're very talented. So I was not trying to impress anybody, all this for just for myself. And I like what I see, so I'm sharing a few of these with you. Then my painting thing. Aditi, as I told you, is a very talented artist, and she had a bunch of stuff left over from when she was in college and high school. So one day I just picked some stuff up, and I cannot actually draw or paint faithfully reproducing different stuff. So I just do extempore experiments with various things. This is done with a butter knife and acrylic paint on canvas, just dabbing paint on, but I hope you guys like it. Then this one I really love because the technique is different, and this is like pour painting, so acrylic pour painting. So you can buy these paints that are in liquid form instead of, you know, the usually semi-solid form that you get the tubes in. So I mixed up the different paints and I poured it, and then I used a straw to create this storm-like thing, you know? It's like a mindstorm, maelstrom of emotions or something like that. So it's trying to convey energy and dynamic action, basically. And so that's the story behind it. This one is kind of interesting. This is also pour painting. So I was trying to create a wave, and I don't know if it'll work, but if I hope you guys can see it moving.
Yes, we can. Yeah.
So there are apps on your iPhone app store that you can download, and it lets you. So I painted this first with the acrylic, and then I took a picture of it, and then I animated it on this app that I just downloaded from the iPhone. So again, you know, it's not that any of it is classical art or classical, you know, here. It's just, we can learn for the rest of our lives. That is what I love about your first company, Curiosity Gym. We can all be curious. We can all learn little things here and there and pick up and do stuff. And it gives such enormous joy and happiness when you do it and you figure something out and aha, I was able to do it. So I think that's real inspiration. You know, you, what you have done with Curiosity Gym is phenomenal. I'm so proud of you for being my friend and having done that, you know, letting people do lifelong learning and pick up interesting things. You don't have to go to a four-year college to pick up some basic electronics or write a Python program. You can do it. Even when we are 60 years old, we can do it. So really great. I applaud what you've done with Curiosity Gym.
Thank you.
I don't know how much time you have, but let's just quickly look through one more here, I guess. Okay. So I think you wanted to go on this one.
Yeah, you had a poem that you written. Maybe I'll just read it out for the audience because the text is a little small. In this one life you have to live, there are many ways to give, myriad injustice and tyrannies to resist and create things that don't yet exist. With your ideas, the world remake, make it better with your unique take. In your life, many roles you'll play, with guts, tough problems you'll slay. To pursue your goals, go the distance. Make them happen with your persistence. Choose wisely, ignore the doubters. Trying your best is all that matters. The road starts from nothingness and returns to nothingness. So travel far and wide, casting fear aside. Look at the well-trodden paths ahead, but take the untrammeled road instead. Dream your own dreams, not somebody else's. Live your own life and no one else's. Come what may, do it your way. Very, very nice. Very nice. Very, very relevant to all of us, students and otherwise. You had one more.
So I just put this slide together to show people that, you know, just before the last thing, this is one quick slide that I wanted to tell everybody, you know, life is not one straight smooth road from, you know, bottom left corner to top right corner, like this green line shows, you know. All of us, you have to know when you're going through tough times, all of us, bar none, go through tough times. It may come in different forms and shapes and different times. You know, some people have personal tragedies, some people have, you know, financial issues, some people have relationship issues, whatever. You know, there are different types of issues that come up and go. But what is really important is that you pick up the pieces and you persist and you shake off the blues and get back on your feet and try again, you know. And it has happened to me, it has happened to my friends and everybody else, you know. The life is not a sprint, you know. Life is a marathon. And so when you're going and looking down at a bad time in your life, right, just think back to what you really want to do, your passions and why you are doing what you are doing, and get back to it, you know. Don't be don't be too down on yourself. You know, you could be the greatest engineer, artist, painter, dancer, whatever, and the world may not even recognize it for years to come.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, just do it, you know. And don't be afraid when you're not making too much progress. Sometimes things are so slow, you know. It takes years to get those first 100 or first 1,000 customers, and then the next year you double, and the third year you triple, and you know, it catches wind at some point. So don't be afraid of the tides being against you and sounding like a really lonely endeavor, you know. Just keep at it and it'll happen.
That's very inspirational for all of us.
Yeah. And like the topic of the day is the journey is the reward. And I can truly tell you that if I had to do it all over again, you know, even right. despite all the issues and problems I've faced or whatever, I would do the same thing all over again, perhaps, you know, maybe a couple of minor tweaks here and there, but I have no regrets. I've lived a regret-free life. And the journey has been the reward, you know. And one of the most important things about my journey is that I have had phenomenal friends like Girish, phenomenal colleagues at work who supported me through the worst of times and the best of times. You know, my great family, my beautiful and wonderful wife, my dear friends who all made it all happen. And the journey has been so much richer because of that company. So with that, I will just maybe go to the end here. Yeah. Girish, is that okay?
Yes.
So
yeah, could you read this out for us?
Yeah. So in the blink of an eye, a lifetime goes by. Thoughts arise, crazy and sublime, play on the canvas of space-time. So real seems the rat race, battles daily we have to face. For love, we are just too busy. Making time ain't so easy. But along the way, read some prose, appreciate art, and smell the rose. With family, make small talk. With a friend, take a walk. Share the joys of near and dear. Bring a smile and wipe a tear. For at the end of the road, when we shoulder no load, emptiness wins and time stands still. It leaves a gaping hole no one can fill. So make the most of your time and live the best life you can live.
Thank you so much, Harish. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and good luck to all of your listeners and students who are.
Yeah. So maybe what we can do, Harish, if there are any other questions from the audience, or Harish, you can unmute yourself and ask. There was a question that came to me directly that I had forgotten to read earlier. Do your clients come to you with problem statements and then you match your sensor to the requirements, or are you able to solve, you know, since your applications are so varied, how do they know what you can do? Very interesting question. Yeah.
Very interesting question. So it's both, you know, it's both. So this is the challenge, you know, what we didn't touch upon in the previous hour is basically that this art of entrepreneurship. So while you're doing your passion and doing all the things you want to do, you have to make a living. And so you have to match, like I said, you have to be relevant to people and meet their needs, right? And one of the beautiful things about the modern system we live in is that you exchange value, you know, mutually and voluntarily, right? So when a customer has a problem, he's trying to solve it, and if you have a solution for it, they willingly and happily pay you money to solve that problem, right? So the interesting thing about a business is you got to be able to do that thousands and hundreds and thousands of times, so that, you know, let's say you make $1 for every problem solved. If you can solve it for a billion people at a dollar, you become a billionaire. You know, that is the beauty of the modern enterprise, right? So the answer to the question is, it's a difficult question. Yes, some people come to us and say, I need to do X, Y, and Z. I'm looking for a force sensor. Can you help me? And then we have to understand what they're doing, you know, like SpaceX wants to go measure thrust force or something, you know, which sensor, 100,000 pounds, million pounds. So you have to, sometimes we don't have it, we have to build it, right? Other times you have solutions, ready-made solution, like I showed you, the sensor with the interface with USB. So we made it so generic and easy to use that anybody who comes there, a college student, a technician, can see it and they understand it. So having a good website, easy to understand, easy to use, videos, demos, all of that comes into play so that you're not sitting and talking to every guy to make a sale and make that little profit to keep your enterprise afloat and successful. So the answer is both, you know. So again, you know, like you might be good in programming, but you need to understand search engine and Google and how Google AdWords work and how marketing works. So there's so much to know. To be an entrepreneur, you have to be a well-rounded guy with lots of different knowledge. Even if you're not an expert at anything, any one particular thing, you have to know enough to play the game effectively and successfully. So dabble, learn all the time, continuous learning, you know. I'm sure this reflects on what you do, Girish, also, I'm sure, what I'm saying.
Yeah, in a different field. The field is very, very vast. It's to encourage others to it's to encourage others to learn and to inquire and to find themselves and to be curious. I think that, you know, just like to, if you were, you know, were to summarize your initial thing, it was force is everything. To us, curiosity is everything.
That is brilliant.
If you're curious, then you can find what's relevant in the outside world and what's relevant to you. And then you start asking the questions that then you start finding the relevant answers for you to chart your career path, right? Yeah. And so both are things on Curiosity Gym, where we do this with schools, or MySphere, where we say the journey, like this journey is the student's journey, right? And it's not going to be directed by anybody else. The direction of MySphere is the student itself. So he's not going to, you know, so it's not hand me down from anywhere, exposed to anyone, but then you do your own thing, right? So, you know, so that's what we that's what the vision is. It's still, like you said, early days of entrepreneurship, where it takes time for people to understand, yes, you know, this is perhaps as fundamental as force in the Lodestar case, that by finding the thing of curiosity and by, you know, just looking in and then maybe writing it down, reflecting on it. Reflections are so important for learning. A lot of times one goes through life and then one doesn't reflect, and then you say, I have X years experience, but then what did you learn? And then you don't know, but you just say, it's like your certificate in college, right? Some of that is relevant to just get you in the door, but it doesn't get you through the interview, you know, right? And so the getting you through this thing is actually, you know, seeing that passion, seeing that spark in the eye. And so we, you know, so the idea of doing this was, in our case, was to have people just find themselves. And we hope that they found some of that by listening to your poetry. I was very inspired by both poems that you had there, because it was really looking in and saying what one can have one's journey do.
How about we both agree on this? The curiosity is the force that will drive your success.
Yeah. So there were a couple of other questions from the audience related to sensors, and we'll take those and then we'll close for the day. Otherwise, we could have closed now, but since there are questions from the audience. Is there a possibility of inventing sensors which can feel the force of pain or harm on bodies during performing critical surgery, where the sensor can feel pain?
Wow, that's a great question. I encourage the guy or girl who asked the question to approach me afterwards, and we can figure out a project and we can make it happen together.
Mr. Anand has asked this question. Would you like to
Yeah, Anand, you can unmute yourself if you like. Yeah.
Yes, it was asked by me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Anand. Such a great idea, such a great question.
Actually, sir, the question interrupted during the slide, which was about the performing surgery. Because sometimes performing surgeries, doctors don't understand the body is feeling pain or not. It gets understood after the surgery when the patient is having a normal life. That's why I asked that question.
So it is a very interesting question, and pain is a very complex subject, you know. Pain can be caused various things like cuts, bruises, push, force, and then who is feeling the pain, right? There's an aspect of consciousness, and you know, when you're unconscious, you don't feel any pain. So it's not just physics and mechanics and mechanical stuff, right? It's a deeper subject that requires some introspection, you know, neuroscience and all kind of stuff. So it's a complex topic. I don't have a quick short answer for you, but it is the kind of question that can lead to an amazing discovery or something down the line that can transform your life and everybody else's life, you know. So I encourage you to investigate it. You're always welcome to contact me afterwards and we can talk more about it.
Yes, sir.
Obviously I don't have a ready answer for you,
because the not only pain but the pressure which is on the student's head during all his career time. Also, this question inspired me from the movie of Previous.
Yeah, I can't hear you very well, but let's leave it at that, I guess, right?
Yeah, it is related to the pain thing. So.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No, sir. Yeah. No.
Anish had raised the hand, or it was just a.
It's just in his name.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So thank you so much, Harish, for this. For coming today and sharing your thoughts and your journey with all of us. We've all been inspired by your journey. And thank you, audience, for participating, and encourage you to attend future talks as well. And we'll have topics on, you know, speakers from who have different careers behind them. As you know, we've had a NASA scientist, an economist, an architect who's traveled to 50 countries, you know, so we seek to invite interesting speakers to this talk series. And if you all know anybody who you would like to also hear from, do reach out to us, and we'd potentially love to have them on as well. Yeah. So thank you again, Harish. And with that, we'll close today's session. Okay?
Thank you, Girish. My pleasure and honor, and wish you and my sphere all the best for great success.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.